Hi everyone, this is Jonathan Farrington, CEO of Top Sales World, of course. Today my guest is Colleen Francis. Colleen is the president and founder of Engage Selling. They're an international sales consultancy organization based out of Canada, but traveling all over the world and spreading the word. Colleen's just got a brand new book out called Nonstop Sales Boom. It hit the shelves in August, and I thought it was really timely to get Colleen in and have a chat about a subject that is so close to my heart. Colleen talks about the boom and bust cycle. I more regularly call it peak and trough syndrome, but we are on the same page. Welcome, Colleen.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's always good to have you back. So I prepared, as always, as I'm so organized, I prepared a few questions about the book.
Great.
And I'm going to hit straight in. Okay, Colleen?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, so tell me, once a seller's committed to a non-stop sales boom, as you describe it, what are some of the key strategies needed to get started?
Well, I think the first thing is what you said. They've committed it to a non-stop sales boom. So two things. One, we should define what it is, because many people think that I mean that they're selling extraordinary amounts, growing exponentially. And a non-stop sales boom is simply that you're hitting your target month after month, year over year, quarter after quarter, however you're measuring yourself. So you're consistently at or above your growth targets. And that's critical, because what we don't want is this, you called it peaks and troughs, I think, or booms and busts, that are so detrimental. So to get started, first we have to recognize that we control whether we are in a nonstop sales boom or whether we're in a boom-bust cycle. And second of all, we have to look at our interactions with our clients, our client engagement, in a more holistic way than a traditional sales process.
Okay. Now, so let me extend that question out.
Sure.
Longer term, what strategies would a seller need?
Well, longer term, the strategy that I advocate is what we call our sales radar. So sales radar is a 360-degree view of your client engagement that takes into consideration a balance between growing net new clients and putting brand new leads into your pipeline and growing and leveraging your existing client base. So it really requires looking at the available market around you in a holistic way and making sure that you're measuring and monitoring the conversion ratios at every stage of that client engagement. Okay. Most sellers, unfortunately, only look at either the bright new shiny objects, and their strategy is let's bring in net new business. So they're constantly making, you know, cold calls, going out to networking events and meeting new people, and they're ignoring their customers. And then there's another group of salespeople whose strategy is let's get the most amount of business from our existing customers. These are people who are great account managers, but they're not good at bringing in new business because many of them are scared to make those new connections. And those salespeople also create a bust in revenue because they're not bringing in new business all the time. So the most important strategy is this sales radar strategy that takes into consideration four stages of customer engagement, from net new business through to participation, through to growth, and then on to leveraging that client base to help you grow again.
Okay. So that's sales radar, and that's the sort of process that you developed internally, yeah?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I'm sure we have discussed that before, and I thought, yeah, that's pretty exciting. Okay, so we've talked about strategies for getting started and succeeding in the long term. Let's think about the skills. What do you feel are the skills a seller should continually be developing?
Oh, well, there's so many of them. First of all, I like to start at the very beginning. From a skills perspective, we have to be developing what I call our client attraction skills. I like to call it ubiquitous prospecting. And, you know, Jonathan, you and I have had this conversation before, how the lines are blurring between sales and marketing, really.
Yeah.
And how sellers today, the best sellers, are really putting themselves out there as experts, as publishers. They're finding ways to attract clients to them instead of just pushing, you know, out to their clients. And so they're writing, they're commenting on blogs, they're tweeting, they're using LinkedIn. And they're doing things that in many cases a traditional marketing department might have, because they realize that they have to market themselves in order for prospects to find them. What's fascinating to me is how much control buyers or prospects have on the front end of that sales cycle. And if salespeople just continue to prospect for new business the way they always have, make cold calls, say, for example, or ask for referrals, they're missing out on a huge number of prospects who are out there doing their own research, who are doing their own prospecting and qualification.
Yeah. Okay. Now, something else that you and I have discussed in the past is essentially a seller's abhorrence of anything to do with metrics.
Yes, I was going to get to that.
Right. And they hate really the resistance to anything involved with metrics and analytics and numbers and tracking. You know, they feel very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So, you know, let's talk directly to the people who are listening in, who would rather avoid the number part of the business. What advice, what encouragement have you got for them?
Well, the very best sellers pay attention to the numbers because they recognize that sales is part art and part science. Yeah. And the numbers don't lie, frankly.
Yeah.
I know there are so many sales experts out there who say, oh, it doesn't matter about the number of calls you make. It just matters about the quality of the calls. Well, that's not really true, because if you make one good call, you're still not going to hit your target, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So in order to create a nonstop sales boom, sellers have to get intimate with the numbers, and they have to pay attention to really two things, what I call leading indicator key performance indicators, or KPIs.
Yeah.
And the leading indicators are all of those numbers or those metrics that tell you how many activities you need to do in order to create the sale. The sale is the lagging indicator, right? When the contract is signed, that's a lagging indicator of success, meaning you've done a whole bunch of things right in advance to get to that point. But you can't replicate your success or improve on it if you don't know what those numbers are. So we look at a couple of things. First, I want to make sure that sellers are really clear on who their ideal target is, because of course, you don't want to make a whole bunch of calls to the wrong target audience, or you'll fail as well.
Yeah.
Second of all, we have to understand the conversion ratios between all the stages in your sales pipeline. So if we look at a really simple sales pipeline and say, you know, we have a contact to become a lead, to become qualified, to get a proposal, to get a close, what is the conversion ratio between all those stages? How many contacts become leads? How many leads become qualified? How many qualified leads get proposals? And how many proposals become sales? And once you start measuring that, then you'll know exactly what you need to do and how long it takes to move those opportunities through the pipeline.
Yeah. And I think one of the key points there, Colleen, is it not, that these types of metrics vary from organization to organization, from industry to industry.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why it's so important that the companies help their salespeople understand these metrics. I don't think it's something that salespeople can just sort of go off and do on their own. They need support, don't they?
No, they absolutely need support. And the measuring of those metrics has to start with the management team, and it has to trickle down through coaching sessions.
Yeah.
So I'm a big advocate of sales coaches. So if that's the leader or the director or the manager, you know, sitting down and using their sales dashboards in whatever CRM system they have to coach the salesperson based on the metrics that they see. Because if the sales coach is only basing their coaching on what they think they know, then the coaching becomes very subjective. But if we look at a sales dashboard, like I was looking at one the other day, and I could see that opportunity creation, which is one of the things that we measure, was wildly inconsistent.
Yeah.
So what I mean is, in May, they created 2 opportunities. In June, they created 20. In July, they created 1. In August, they created 30. In September, they created 1. You know, so it was just this up and down. And I compared it to their closing, or when their ship dates, it was the exact opposite. So now I can look at that and I can say to the sales rep, look, on the months where you create lots of opportunities, you close nothing. And the months where you create no opportunities, you close everything. Those are the facts. There's nothing, you can't dispute that. And so then we can have an intelligent conversation about how to correct that behavior.
Yeah, and because you know, typically, as we know, and again that we've discussed, sellers prefer working on the opportunities that are about to close and get that sense of achievement far more than they enjoy going out prospecting again. And what you've described, what you've described there is the perfect boom and bust or peak and drop syndrome.
Exactly, and that's why I wrote the book, because I noticed that that trend was absolutely happening. You know, people would say to me, hey, Colleen, I don't need you as a consultant or a trainer because we're having the best month ever. And then they call me the next month and say, whoa, we're in the dumps. Can you help? Yeah. And this was happening over and over and over again. And I realized, you know what, it's completely self-inflicted. And once you recognize the pattern, you can fix it right away.
Absolutely. Now, listen, just going back to Sales Radar again, one of the things that fascinated me and actually warmed the cockles of my heart, because, again, this is something so, you know, so close to my thinking. It's really, really important that sellers, you know, don't just focus on new opportunities and that they actually think about different ways to work and maximize the connections that they've already got. Can you give us one or two examples of how this has been done by successful sellers using your approach, Colleen?
Sure. Well, I also noticed that sellers who were successful in growing their current book of business, so the account management process and growing their clients, were really good at leveraging their relationships into multiple relationships inside the account. So the dangerous thing is when a seller sits back and says, well, the COO is my buyer. He's the one who signs the checks. He's the one who cut the PO. He's on my side. I don't need to develop any relationships inside the account. And they get complacent because that's dangerous.
Yeah.
You can't grow an account if you don't have multiple relationships. So what I like to tell people in when it comes to Sales Radar simply is, in order to grow your book of business inside a current account, you need frequency and reach. So reach meaning you have to grow your contact base, you know, wide and deep inside the account. That's the first step. And then frequency meaning you have to reach out to those people on a regular basis. If you only have one contact inside the account, you're blind to many other opportunities, and you can only talk to that person so often in a month before you're a stalker. But if you have 10 or 15 or 3 or, you know, 50 contacts inside that account, you have that many more times to spot opportunities, and you can be in front of that customer so much more often. And really what happens, and my thinking is, we transform from being a vendor to a partner to an insider. So my thinking is, we need to stop trying to be a partner with our client, and we need to start thinking about being an insider to that account. And the only way to do that is to have multiple relationships.
Yeah, yeah. And that's where you've moved right field to the only me territory in that account. That's what you're working to build. And I think the other point is this. Is that when you've only got one account, when you've only got one contact in the account, you're incredibly vulnerable, aren't you? Because, you know, that guy sort of gets hit by a piece of space debris on the way into work, or, you know, suddenly changes company. I mean, what have you got left?
Well, exactly. And your client isn't necessarily going to tell you, hey, you know, I'm actively looking for a new job. And your clients or your buyer's boss isn't going to tell you, hey, they're going to be fired next week, so you better build up new relationships. But those things happen in corporate life.
Absolutely.
And I've seen, we talk about it in the book, a client of ours lost $1 million worth of business because he was too pig-headed to believe that he needed to build out other relationships other than the COO. And when the COO left, the new guys that came in, of course, wanted to bring in their own suppliers, and they were thought of as a vendor. Nobody above, below, or beside was fighting to keep this sales rep as their supplier. $1 million gone in matter of months.
Absolutely.
So, you know, the other piece there I think that's important that differentiates the way nonstop sales boomers work is they're not afraid to let other people inside their own company have relationships as well. Yeah. They know that they're the conductor there, but also part of the protection and growth strategy is to make sure that their manager has relationships with their buyer's managers, that They have consultants who have relationships. So at all levels of the organization, all the way down from getting paid to the most executive levels, there's connections inside the company. And that helps to build corporate rapport. So the company, this is important for a sales leader, because every sales leader that I know has experienced that fear of, oh, what if my top guy leaves and takes the customers with them? Mm-hmm. You can prevent that from happening if you also have relationships so that the buyer doesn't just have rapport with the salesperson, but they have rapport with your company.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely right. And I think that's really the strength of team selling.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, COO speaks COO language, CFO speaks CFO language, CM and so forth. And having that sort of multi-level selling approach really does help to, you know, build a brick wall around that relationship. I think it's
absolutely.
Yeah.
And it really surprises me that not a lot of people are talking about this, or very few people. When I talk to my clients about this corporate rapport strategy, they'll look at me blankly like, whoa, no one's ever told me that before, because people are still talking about building rapport on a personal level, which is important, but it's only the start of the process.
Absolutely right. Now, listen, you know, as always, we're time constrained. But before I let you go, let me just say this. We've covered an awful lot of ground here today, and I think a recap would be really, really helpful. So why don't we do it this way? What are the three things sellers should stop doing and the top three things they should do instead to create what you call a non-stop sales boom, Colleen?
Okay. So let's talk about what they should stop doing first. So first of all, they have to stop focusing all their energies on closing the opportunities that are in the pipeline now and ignoring the net new business development. Okay, so that's number one. So they have to have that balanced approach. Two, they have to stop ignoring the metrics.
Yeah.
And I know you'll agree with me on that one.
Yeah, yeah.
So they have to pay attention to the metrics, know what they are, and start measuring them. And three, they have to stop thinking about client engagement as a linear process and start thinking about it holistically and knowing that clients can exist in more than one state of sales engagement in sales radar at a time, and they can skip over states. It's not a linear process.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So those are the three things they have to stop doing.
Good.
So what do they have to start doing? Well, they have to start thinking about prospecting or client attraction, which is the first state of sales radar, as a ubiquitous process. And they have to embrace both, let's call them old school and new school.
Yeah.
I called it sales 3.0. So it's not about doing one at the expense of the other. They have to be everywhere. And I think ubiquity is a great word there. Be everywhere, do everything, find everyone. So that's really important, because it's the number one thing. And that's really where salespeople start to become a little bit more marketing focused, but it's critical. Number two, in order to grow their clients after the sale is made, they have to stop thinking about the close being the signing of the contract and start thinking about the close being only when the client is fully enabled with the product. So I'm advocating that all salespeople stay engaged with their clients all the way through until implementation is complete. Because in doing so, you spot opportunities, you meet new people, and you can start growing that account right away. As a salesperson as well, you'll push for a faster implementation, which creates faster results, happier prospects, or happier clients, really, and then more prospects. So that's important. And the third thing, and this is more organizational than sellers, but I think that organizationally, they have to embrace this concept of sales radar and make sure that marketing and sales and delivery are all working together to create this nonstop sales boom. Because what we're finding is if one division or one department is out of sync, for example, marketing and sales, if they're out of sync in terms of what a good lead is, or how a lead should be qualified, then we can create some incendiary warfare there, which will pit the two departments apart. And you cannot create a nonstop sales boom unless the delivery side of your business, the marketing side, and the sales side are all in sync.
Yeah, yeah, Yeah. Okay, well, that's excellent. That's three do's and three don'ts, and I think that's very, very positive. Excuse me. Right, so there's two calls to action, listeners. The first is you need to buy this book, Nonstop Sales Boom by Colleen Francis, and I'm sure it's Amazon. Where else is it, Colleen?
Yeah, it's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Indigo if you're in Canada. You can find it at salesboombook.com as well.
Yeah, okay, excellent. And also, if you want to learn more about Sales Radar and you want to learn more about Colleen and you want to learn more about Colleen's company, Engage Selling, then I suggest you type in Colleen.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were going to finish that yourself.
No.
You can go to engageselling.com.
Yeah. Well done. Now, what you also need to know, listeners, is Colleen writes regularly to her blog. She's a regular contributor to Top Sales World. She's been part of the Top Sales World organization. Initiative, I probably ought to call it, since day one virtually. So she's an 8-year-old veteran. Colleen, thanks so much. Good luck with the book. You know that we'll be rooting for you. You know that we'll be promoting it like billio over at Top Sales World.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Appreciate the support.
Thanks again. Okay, listeners, hope you enjoyed that. I mean, seriously, this is a good book. I've read it, Nonstop Sales Boom. It's, as I touched on during the interview, it highlights a number of issues that are very close to my heart. And Colleen and I have been talking about these over the last 3-4 years. I'm delighted that she's brought out a book that addresses this serious, serious issue. And when we think that only 50%, probably even 49% in 2014 of frontline sales professionals are going to hit quota, okay, maybe, just maybe, this is another vital piece of advice, another vital weapon for helping you get across that line. Thanks for joining me. This is Jonathan Farrington. Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.